Hi, everybody. Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast. I'm Phil Pringle, your host, and it's such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for jumping on today. I got in the studio here, Joe Mikak, our producer who looks after us every week, and Ryan Trestrail, the engineer, making things all sound pretty good. But our conversation today is one of my most favorite people in all the world, my own son, my youngest son, Joseph Pringle, all the way in Los Angeles. So he's going to be talking to us from his home to us here in Sydney. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good. I'm so glad that we get to have this little chat and, you know, conversation and do it with knowing that it's going to help, you know, some other people and families and fathers and sons.
Yeah, I really appreciate being here today. And you know, Dad, you're my hero. You're my father, but I look up to you in so many ways. And you know, after all the things that we've walked through personally in our relationship, and then how you've helped guide me in a spiritual, faith-based way through every trial, just promotes the father that I want to be. And I want to try and mimic that as best as I can. So yeah, it's just an honor to be here and hanging out with you.
Well, that's so kind of you, Joe. And you know, I've always I mean, right from the beginning, you were, as you know, we've said, a surprise. we already had two kids and we thought we're done. And but then you appeared on the scene, and I couldn't have been happier. When my wife, when Chris, your mum, told me, you know, and she wondered how I'd react, but I was just completely ecstatic. I thought, this is fantastic. And I came from a family of three kids, and so you were, in my view, a delightful surprise, not just an unwanted, and it must be so awkward when kids are a surprise to a couple, and there's a resentment felt towards them. How bad would that be?
Completely. I can imagine the awkwardness of being like, well, we weren't expecting you, but, you know, we changed our lives for you. Because, I mean, look, there's 11 years between me and my sister, Beck, and 9 years between my brother and I. And I was born in November, which really puts me as a Valentine's baby.
There you go.
I don't know how romantic you were that year, but through caution of the wind and you got a lifelong responsibility of me.
Yeah, I've never been that romantic, which is unfortunate for your mother. You know, I'm a bit too choleric, I think. You know, Joe, we got like three phases that to this point in our relationship that I can kind of locate, and that was the first long period of time when you were a pastor's kid in church, and you grew up in youth and you had a band, and then you weren't too bad, you weren't too naughty, but you got involved. You were singing. You've always been an amazing worship leader. So you were leading worship and you were creating albums. I think you helped us do maybe five albums, maybe more. And
way
wrote
more,
a lot of songs.
Way more.
Yeah, okay. And worked with us at church. And they were pretty great years. And then you went through another phase, but we'll talk about that after this. What were those, how did you find being a pastor's kid, being my boy in those years?
Well, like, I guess that whole section works in phases too. Like, as a kid, like pre-teen, so to say, you kind of look up in this very heroic sense towards father, your father or a father figure in your life. And, you know, I wanted to be a karate master. I wanted to be a baseball star, and I wanted to be a preacher. And at that, I really wanted to be saved, because I think I went down the front maybe 17,000 times.
Did. You got a lot of Bibles.
I had a lot of those Bibles.
I remember us having a whole stack of Bibles in your bedroom, because you'd get a Bible every time you got saved.
So there was that phase. And then I think in my teenage years, I kind of went wandering a little bit. And I would say that at that point when peer pressure begins to come into play, and your dad's a pastor, there's like one or two sides of it. And Josh Kelsey is probably the golden model of living right. strong and living incredibly well. And that's probably the best testimony that you can have. But for me, I kind of went the other way, and that would be a rebellious streak. And I was, you know, as the youngest, you get away with probably the most.
You do. I always pity the firstborn because you learn everything with them, you know, you practice on them and you get ready. And you're so freaked out with this little bundle of life that you think, oh, we've got to so look after this. But then, you know, the next kid comes along and you realize, oh, it's not the end of the world if they don't eat their dessert or their breakfast. And then by the third one, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, he's eating the worms again. Just look, that's his dinner. So I think, you know, given the leniency there, and that's not at fault of parenting at all, but just for me, I was probably able to hide a lot more. Some of the things that I, you know, was going through as a teenager, and that would be the discovery of drugs and alcohol in those early years. And that's also something that, you know, we'll get into probably more, but the escapism that I sought, and also the seeking to not be defined by what my father does, and it not being, you know, in school circles, the coolest thing, so sure. to say. And
not cool to be a pastor's kid, right?
Yeah, and at that, not just a little, and I'm not trying to bag out the church on the corner here, but a church that attracted a lot of attention in a place, what, the Northern Beach has 350,000 people. So,
yeah. Big church, and we were in the press a lot, and
yeah.
had a lot of focus on us because we're, you know, growing, and we had some profiles. So, you know, that's interesting for kids to try and work through and handle.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my response to that was trying to prove that I'm the baddest kid on the block.
I'm not. You think I'm a goody-good, right? Well, I'm just going to prove you wrong.
Exactly. So, and I was passionate about it.
Yes, like you are.
I'm a passionate individual, I suppose. So, I kind of enjoyed that. And, it was actually around the time that your dad, granddad, passed away. I was about 16 and a half.
Right.
And it was, I was very dark. I think you might remember that. Mm-hmm. And then that came about, and I'd lost some friends to suicide around that time, three friends in about 4 months. And I remember being at granddad's funeral and in the last conversations with him and just deciding something needs to change. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to join the military, if you remember. And
yeah, I did.
And serve.
Yeah, you kind of wanted to be quite a few things. A carpenter. But I think, you know, just the fact that you want to be, have aspirations, that was good. And then, like you say, you had this heart for God at a very early age, and that disposition, I think, even though it gets covered up, really guides, it's like a homing beacon. It guides people through all the situations they do find themselves in, finally to home. But carry on. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. So I think at that point, it was kind of a pivotal moment that I remember, I'm going to try and be good. And so in that process, I did lose a lot of friends, and I began, you know, coming to church in the sense of I was turning up. I wasn't just filling a seat.
Yes.
Anymore. And the
yeah, that's a, and the, that's a big, big day, isn't it? When you, between going to church because you have to, because your parents mm-hmm. say you got to, and then one day you think, okay, I actually want to go to church. And
right.
And if, you know, as a parent, I would, I think I might have said it to you. I said to all our kids, hey, look, if coming to our church is going to cause too much pain and pressure or distress, anguish, whatever, go to another one. But but don't feel that you've got to come here. I'm more interested in you having that personal relationship with Christ and keeping your spiritual life alive. And and I think if you could feel that, if fathers can, you know, be releasing to their kids, I don't think that means you just say anything goes, go anywhere you like, because there are some, you know, damaging situations as well. But I think bringing guidance that sets people free but also nudges them in the right direction really helps young people make good choices.
Yeah, completely. And that's when I decided to go to Hillsong. And
you did?
No, I'm kidding.
God bless Hillsong.
Yeah, God bless Hillsong. I used to go to their youth group and things like that. It was awesome. Anyway, funny joke. Moving right along, I, after that, just got involved with the music at church and started a band with Josh Kelsey and Glenn Allsop, James Murray, Mario Irawan.
Too funny.
And so we started writing music together and being involved with worship at
Tomorrow, youth. Wasn't it?
Yeah. The worst name you could possibly think of, the Tomorrow Band.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, we did that for a while, and we're involved with the youth ministry Pulse.
Yeah.
And then that kind of, you know, just progressed on and on, and I began working with one of our previous music directors, and then was under Ryan Smith.
Yeah.
And then sat under Ryan for a long time, and then we started working together and writing music for church. So, think it's an important moment there that I realize now looking back, but even at that point I had a very comfortable faith.
Right.
And I was living in the convenient and very covering shadow of what I would call my father's prayers, and the kind of refuge. I never really became the person like, do you know who my dad is? Never.
No.
But I personally and inside, I felt a faith covered by that.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily one that stood on its own legs.
Right.
I would
and
say
that's,
so.
And that journey for a lot of kids, whether they're pastors' kids or not, just kids growing up in church, every parent should be praying for that to happen, that their kid is going to have a personal encounter, not just an inherited encounter with Jesus.
Completely.
And how that prayer gets answered, you got to leave that with God, because he knows that heart of that child better than anybody. Some of them may need to go through a pretty difficult journey, which you did. Others maybe not. And they're going to be okay. Maybe they'll have a more difficult journey later on.
But, right.
Yeah. But anyway, you decided, okay, I'm going to America and I'm going to be a rock star. I'm not sure if that was how clear the decision was, but that seemed to us as to what your aspirations were.
Yeah. So there was a point, and I kind of put it to prayer, and I masked it a lot. Looking back, it's pretty easy to mask selfish ambition with a holy mission. And I think that's what I was kind of wanting to do. But deep down, inherently, whether subconsciously or just not me owning the selfish side of it, was I just wanted to be in a place where I could do what I want and write songs about anything, and then also not run into someone I knew every 2 seconds. But I think the rebellious nature within me began, like, overthrowing, like what I said before, the faith that was built on,
right.
like if I can say it best, the faith that was built on someone else's legs.
Right. Okay.
Began to crumble in a way, and I just sought to have that kind of escape or relief.
Right.
And that began what I would call like a bit of friction between you and I.
It was never super serious, though. I think my love for you always, you know, wanted to handle you gently, and I was pretty confident. I was never anxious that you wouldn't come all the way through. It was distressing at times, but you know, and you get a little angsty. So come on, Joe, you know, what are you doing? But you know, I was pretty confident that God had His hand on you, and you'd come through the whole thing. And when a parent has that faith, you can afford to be loving and not judgmental, because you know it's going to swing around eventually.
How on your front, with me being a new father, you know, I now have the
and a pastor.
And a pastor, yeah. I have these feelings of, oh my goodness, the stuff I put my parents through, how am I going to deal with it? And then,
no, it's,
you know,
beautiful for us. It's called revenge.
But how do you as a parent in those situations, when you've guided and built up as best as you can a moral code and a value system for that child and instilled in them, you know, a faith, how do you, when hard times come around, then practically release the responsibility into God's hands? Because I can imagine it to be...
Yeah, it is. It's a big challenge. But I think if you've got faith in God, I just do that with everything. Because that straightens out your attitudes on everything. I just tell myself most every day, have faith in God. And because the anxiety or the anger, which is the double A's of most people, or most males anyway, they're either anxious or angry. And sometimes it's just a residual spiritual emotion that we have. And then we find that our kids are a good issue to express that stuff on, and they might create it and frustrate our lives. But if we're peaceful people and we've got faith in God, we're not going to get too agitated by those moments. We can believe that it's going to, and it relates to the whole idea of, do I save my own life or does God do that? Is salvation by my works, or is it by the action of Christ? And so. And I think then the last thing is patience. I'm a choleric personality. I like things done. I like them done quickly. I'm decisive. So getting to moments where you can't resolve the issue is very frustrating for me. And I've had to learn that all my life, to learn to walk around with my shoelaces undone, basically. You want to tie them up. You want to finish it up, but it's out of your hands. And so it's not about getting a miracle so much as living above the problem. And I think that's what faith does, that as much as anything. It helps you live with unfinished problems and yet stay in victory.
Yeah, right. And that's just a continual form of acceptance.
Yeah.
Acceptance that God is who He says He is.
Yeah.
That the world doesn't operate in the way Joe wants it. Like, I have to come into acceptance when I drive down our Los Angeles freeways that not everyone drives like Joe does, else I'm going to go into one of those A's, anger. Right. And when I find that acceptance, then peace comes. And acceptance that God is in control, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So then you ended up in a reasonably bad way. I'm not sure if you want to talk about that, but you don't have to. But coming out of that, you know, a friend really helped you to come out of that pit.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the short and skinny of that period of life is, you know, I'd moved to LA and things were going great. I would say that in my late teens, when after Granddad had passed away, I like drugs were not necessarily a huge problem, but they were gone from that point. And but drinking remained, and I wouldn't say it was a consistent thing then. It was more stages of binges. And when I came to Los Angeles, that didn't progress, but was kind of remaining. And that went through stints. It went through ups and downs. But I did, at one point, like soon thereafter, I got into like a toxic relationship. On both sides, and I am happy to take all of my responsibility in that. It was just, I was not in the place for it, and it was a long distance thing, and it ended up really tearing me apart personally, and a big war with myself happening internally. So the follow up to that was not that great, and I had two nervous breakdowns quickly thereafter, and I couldn't stop shaking for, you know, long periods, three to 6 months. And I went on medications at that point, but medications don't really work when you are drinking, you know, a bottle of whiskey a day. And so, that kind of progressed into drugs once again. And so with that, a lot of anxiety is built up, not just because of the substance itself creates a physical anxiety that's released, but then also, you know, the decisions you make when you're high, when you're out of your mind, when you're distancing yourself as far as you can from a conscience that's screaming, you make decisions that you don't really want to make.
Right.
And that is the kind of tumbling down and snowball effect of being stuck in that cycle. And I was in that cycle for many years while I was out here, and it got progressively worse and worse. My physical health got to a pretty bad point. I tried to commit suicide at one point and tried to OD on medication, which didn't work. And I woke up, you know, 36 hours later, and things were just not good. And obviously,
none of that's good. So then Cy, you ended up in Cy's house for 6 weeks. He shut you in there and said you can't get out until you get loosed.
Yes.
Or using.
Yep.
And you started up with your, then you did AA, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I moved to New York for a while, and it got worse there. And then I came back to LA for rehab, and I skipped rehab and stumbled around for about 6 months. And in that period, about a year before committing, you know, sitting down with Cy, I'd known him, and he stuck with me for about 6 months when I was in LA, and just I could not hold together a number of days of sobriety, and eventually come into a lot of very bad situations that had accumulated, and I could not string together the day. So he locked me in his house. He offered me his house, and he's married, and they were trying for a kid. He's been sober at that point for 8 years, and he locked me in his house for 6 weeks, and the fog cleared, and I began working a program, a 12-step program, from that point out until today. And
how awesome is that, huh? Yeah.
It's been an incredible journey, and there's within a church setting, there's sometimes kind of a shunning of the 12 steps, and maybe that be because of the language that's used in terms of higher power.
Came out of a Christian, it's got a very deep Christian heritage, and it's incredibly helpful for so many, literally millions of people who
completely
have the associated programs. Joe, you know, after doing that, then you found your way back into our C3LA congregation because you had a lot of, you know, friends there, like the Sweetman family, and that was awesome. Yep. And obviously Dan and Leah, your brother and sister-in-law. And, I mean, friends and family and all of that create a great connection. But then this is the third phase of your journey. And I'm not sure I've seen such a miraculous turnaround. Well, I have occasionally, but it was so dramatic what God did in your life. It was incredible, right?
Yeah, it was quite stunning, and I'm still dumbfounded looking back. It's funny, like, you know, a couple of weeks back, Christine and Charlie went down to visit her parents in San Diego.
Charlie is their daughter, everybody. Just let you know.
Is our daughter. Yeah. Yeah, so they went down for three nights, and I was sitting in the home, and I'm just thinking, even if I had turned everything around and I had this home and everything, the biggest blessing is the family and relationship I have with my wife.
Yeah.
Because these blessings and whatever comes with a solid life in faith is worth sharing with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, but it was
just astonishing to me to see like you got out of the challenges, the difficulties, the darkness, and those things that were binding you. Then you just start following Jesus and living right, and then boom, the next thing you've got the most gorgeous girl in the world there, you know, who's interested. And you meet in church, spouses in the house, and you know, and then she, from memory, when I've talked to Christine, she said her prayer was she wanted to marry a hot man of God.
Yeah, I'm not sure if she got the hot part, but she got a man of God part.
And she said she saw you and said he's hot, and I'm not sure he's a man of God though. And the Lord said, "Yeah, leave that to me. I'm working on him." And and then the next thing, I can't remember which came first, but you know, you managed to get a house, buy a house in LA, and then also you become ordained as a pastor in the C3LA church through Jake and Nicole Sweetman's guidance.
Yeah,
what a story.
It was a lot all soon, and I think the promise in Joel that just has stood out to me continually, which is I'll restore to you the days that were lost by the locust.
The years lost
by the locust. And so I can't put that in any other place than God's goodness and mercy in giving back in a very short amount of time so much in a very promised way. And I can't relate it to or give it any other glory than to God, but there was a lot of work in getting straight.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just a miracle. A lot of hard work. And like in Romans, it says, you'll be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Yeah. It's a real simple little quote, but it's a very, very long road.
Yeah, the deal is though, that if God just did it all, then we would never grow. And we would never build strength into our character or our will or anything.
Completely.
So he doesn't do the whole miracle. I mean, he gives us the inclination and the motivation and the hope, etc. And he will strengthen us if we make that decision to, I'm going to get free of this. We'll find a strength is there, but he won't do it all for us.
Right. And I think that's in terms of the point of addiction. Addiction is a very small portion about the substance that you're medicating yourself with.
Right.
It's just a tool that you've found to survive and survive the pain that you feel on the inside, survive the disconnection to purpose, survive the absence of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But once you take that away, if you do nothing for your mind, if you do nothing for your spirit, then you are, you know, there's a saying, a dry drunk. And I experienced that for the first 4 months and then heavily worked the program, which to me was just living in action the book of James, the right. books of Timothy, right. and the Beatitudes of Christ.
Right.
And all those steps did were clear these channels that are connected to God, right. cleared them all out so that I can have constant communication with the one who keeps me
beautiful.
Not only just free of addiction, but sober-minded, strong Super. In spirit,
yeah. you're
strong
you're
in character.
So many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, not just with the message, but that whole strength of spirit that you've come out of. Joe, we're going to wind up in about a minute. What's your favorite verse?
My favorite verse?
Yeah.
man, I think it's a tough one these
them.
Days.
One of them. Sorry, man.
Yeah, one on. Of them. In Isaiah, it says, wake up, O Israel, shake off your dust. No, sorry, put your robes of strength on and robe yourself with strength.
Yeah.
And put on your beautiful robes and then shake off the dust. And I love that verse. Because A, it's an alarm clock. And then secondly, because of the process there, God doesn't say, wake up, shake off your dust and then put on your beautiful clothes
right.
And robe yourself with strength. He says, put your robes on and then shake yourself off. Right. So to me, that just, that's the gospel. Come as you are. I'll give you strength. And on this journey, the dust will get shaken off. And so
come as you are.
That one has continually spoken to me. And then Isaiah 61, again, another yeah. Isaiah one. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me to preach good news to the poor.
Yeah.
And I use that in many different ways. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me to be a father, a patient yeah. father today. Yeah. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me.
Yeah, I believe that about you, Joe. I believe the Spirit of the Lord is on you. And I couldn't be prouder of you than I am, son. You have done exceptionally well in overcoming, and I'm so blessed to see your world come together. It takes a price, I know, but anything good does, and you've been prepared to pay it, to pick up your cross, deny yourself, and follow Jesus, and that's what's going to take you higher and higher right through your life. And as you say, the Spirit of God is on you. The reason you can say it is because it's a reality, and you're going to be preaching the gospel to literally millions of people, no doubt about it, setting the captives free and bringing resurrection life. So thanks for talking with us today, Joe. I know it's a little unusual, you know, kind of slightly formal every now and then, but you know, yeah, it's all good. We love you, and thanks everybody for jumping on board this week. And I know it's a more intimate and kind of, you know, revealing, vulnerable conversation, and I know that this could very well be enormously helpful to some families, to some fathers, and to some sons. Looking forward to talking with you next week. Don't forget to subscribe, hit that subscribe button, and rate us and review us. Help us to do better. Let us know how we're doing. You can get my books on philpringle.com or on Amazon. You can get an ebook there, and there's a few of them on hope, faith, peace, and we'd love to be hearing from you on our Instagram accounts, which is Phil Pringle, or my wife's is Chris A. Pringle. Looking forward to seeing you next week. God bless you. Have a great one.